Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Welcome to Better Than Life, the podcast where we talk to comedians about Red Dwarf. I'm Fergus, and I watch this show on the regs.
And I'm John, and I very much don't, but I am now because I'm co-hosting this podcast. Let's talk about The Last Day with Dulce Sloane.
Yes!
It's a show about a man who's lost 3 million years in space. His company had evolved. Robot and a ship that's gone senile. We love the jokes and sci-fi stuff, that's why it's better than life.
Okay, listener, get ready for this, because we are closing out series 3 on the highest of highs. Our guest to talk about all things Red Dwarf and The Last Day is a multi-award winning stand-up actress, and not only a senior correspondent on The Daily Show, but also a guest host of The Daily Show, which means, listener, Jon Stewart is just keeping the Dulce Sloane chair warm. Welcome to Better Than Life, Dulce Sloane.
Hello!
Hey. We're so happy to have you here, all the way from sunny Los Angeles. Dulce, can I confess something to you before we really get going? I'm quite self-conscious about asking you questions today, because I'm a bloke who asks stuff like, well, why is Red Dwarf so funny? Whereas you are an award-nominated interviewer. So, listener, if you haven't heard, Dulce's up for a GLAAD Award for Outstanding Variety or Talk Show episode.
Hell yeah.
Which is amazing. And this is for an interview that you did with Sasha Colby on The Daily Show about what it means to be a happy trans person.
Yes.
This is so cool. What does that nomination mean to you?
It means that I did my job.
Right.
Also, in that interview, she made me one of her daughters in the House of Colby. And so I have a big responsibility to my house and to my mother.
Hell yeah.
It was really important, one, because I'm a fan of hers, but also, two, I was glad that she was talking about being a happy trans person, because as a woman and as a Black person, people love to live in the tragedy of my existence and how hard it must be to be Black. And it didn't mean that it's hard and hard it is to be a woman and all of that. And so a lot of times in like media, it's people always want to hear it's just trauma porn and all of this. Mm. And so the fact that she made it a point to talk about being a happy trans person. And there's so many times when I'm interviewed where I just have to go, yeah, but I'm happy too.
Yes.
Why are we only focusing on these bad things? It's very upsetting for people to just want to dredge up stuff. It's like, listen, I'm in a Holiday Inn in Pittsburgh trying to do shows tonight, lady. I really was not trying to think about this today. Ask me about my book. Ask me about this. Ask me about that. But you, so this happened to you? That ain't what we're here for. I'm not going to participate in this nonsense. So I was very happy to show that that's her general existence. It's like, it doesn't have to be. And also it's for other, it's how you show someone's humanity. It's how you can relate to someone, is seeing someone happy. So I was very happy to be a part of that interview and facilitate that for her.
There's not enough 360 narratives going on in this world, which is not a thing I thought I'd ever find myself saying here on this podcast about Red Dwarf, but you're absolutely right.
Yeah, and it just has to be, it's just as a general thing. I mean, it's like, I saw the shift on British television where it was just like, Because I've watched every season of Father Brown, every season of Death in Paradise, and all these different British shows that I've grown up watching. And I remember, you know, British TV was very white for a long time.
Mm.
And then there was just like, oh, we need to change that. And then the change was immediate.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, damn, okay. But American TV has been more diverse than British television for longer because America's just a more diverse country. There's just more people here.
We wanted to talk to you a little bit about that, especially in the realm of sitcom and comedy.
Mm-hmm.
Sanford and Son
mm-hmm.
was 72.
Mm-hmm.
That was based on an English sitcom, Steptoe and Son. That was about some working class white dudes.
Mm.
And John and I were talking about this earlier on, going like, America claims it doesn't have a class system, but it's telling like the transmutation, the equivalent of a working class family working in a dumpyard in Britain became a black family in America.
Yeah, America loves to lie about class as if that doesn't exist, but it's like, we're just so busy being so racist. But on the flip side, what I've noticed from, you know, UK television and friends from the UK likes to focus on class as if there is no racism. We're just like, oh, we can't be racist, we're classist. And it's just like, okay, just because you put the races you didn't like together.
That's it.
Everyone frames the relationship between Lister and Rimmer as being a class thing. It could easily be appointed a race thing as well.
Right.
It's just never talked about in the show.
Mm.
It wasn't talked about in the show because Lister is so entrenched in white culture that there's no space to talk about his blackness because we're never in a space of his blackness. You get all the blackness from the cat and he's an alien because he's the, you know, the Zoot Suit, James Brown kind of very much in this blackness when he's a black cat. But then they have their moments where you can see it come together. And you're like, okay, this is two black men coming. Also, Lister's obviously mixed. And then like, just in the love interest of Kachansky and always seeing her. It's just like, so he very much lives in British whiteness. So you never have to have the conversation because Lister's race doesn't come into question because he lives in whiteness so much that class would be the only barrier between him and Rimmer. Rimmer is so focused on going above his station and leaving the class that he's in, that you can only meet Rimmer where he's at. Because he's such a f*** up, he can't get any higher than where he's at.
It's true.
The second class technician, he's never getting out of that.
So I want to ask then, so Dorsey, as I understand it, you were in with Red Dwarf from basically the beginning of when it started airing in the States, right? When it was on PBS back in the late 80s, is that correct?
Yeah, I remember my mom, I remember the third grade, it's like 91, 92. So all the British comedies came on PBS on Saturday night.
Right.
And my mom would wake me and my brother up to watch Red Dwarf. But like, I remember watching Are You Being Served with my grandma. So I had like a really, as a kid, I had a very good impression of Mrs. Slocum. Very well. No one appreciated
that's
it.
Rare.
Yeah, for a 9-year-old black girl to have an impression of a woman who hasn't been alive since the 70s, it's crazy. So Waiting for God, that lady was mean. And then Keeping Up Appearances, Mrs. Bouquet, because we've all seen uppity people, bougie, as my people call them in America, trying to act like that they're doing more than they are. And then Ab Fab, which everybody likes.
Yeah.
But those were the shows that we would watch. But my mom would wake us up to watch Red Dwarf.
Right.
We'd go to bed and my mom would wake up and be like, Red Dwarf is on, Red Dwarf is on. Red Dwarf is the reason I got Netflix, because it was on Netflix. It was the reason I got BritBox, because it was on BritBox. And then I remember when I was in college, somebody was selling a VHS set of every season of Red Dwarf that had come out. And there was like a bonus tape, because like Smeg Ups and Smeg Outs that they would sell only around like the PBS fundraising time.
Yeah.
And I remember as a college, I like saved up $80.
Wow.
For this man to send me all these VHS tapes. They're somewhere in my mom's house in Atlanta.
That's awesome. The whole reason this podcast exists is obviously it was a big show over here and comedians love it. We realized this. So it's not hard to find British comedians to come on and talk about Red Dwarf. It sounds like maybe it was more of a cult thing in the States. Like, do you get to have this conversation much with other comedians, or is it not even known there?
No, I don't have this conversation with many people. I remember the Dragon Con a couple years ago, and there was this black dude dressed like Rimmer.
Oh, amazing.
And because I took a picture with him, and he was like, tens of thousands of people come to Atlanta for Dragon Con. And he was like, maybe 100 people said something to him the whole 5 days he was there. So it's very much a cult thing here.
Mm.
The reason that I always liked it, the reason we always liked it, because it was black people in space.
Mm.
So that's why we watched it. Because that's why I love Deep Space Nine, because like Captain Sisko. And that's why I love the Klingons, because it was black people with long hair in space.
Right.
And then I love cats, and the cat is the cat. Mm. And I love the fact the cat had an American accent, didn't have a British accent.
Yeah.
And he was the epitome of like as I got older, I was just like, oh, this is like their idea of an American.
I was going to ask you about that, because I can vividly imagine what, like, if the shoe was on the other foot, this would be, you know, the cat would be some sort of guy in a top hat and tails kind of prancing down the corridor with a stick. And as a Brit, you might watch that and be a little bit like, okay, I'm trying not to be offended here. But I mean, was the cat, were you good with the cat? Is the voice convincing as an actual American?
The cat was great.
Yeah.
It wasn't that he was an American. It was the fact that he was a cat that it was a person.
Yeah.
Like, that was the thing. Like, to this day, like, I was at the store with my mom a while back and I was looking at something and she was like, did you find a shiny thing? So like there's these references yeah. that we'll still make from the show. It's like, you can't have my shiny thing. I remember the other day I was getting something, like me and my brother were like, we had gone grocery shopping and we're separating our stuff. And I was like, this is mine. This is mine. And he went, all of this is mine. So it's just little stuff. It was a British television show and like half the cast was black.
Yeah.
And so growing up, I never saw black people on British TV shows.
Yeah, right.
And so not only that, where they were like in space, like, yes, Lister is disgusting, but he was still in space. He was 3 million miles.
He's the last human. He's the sole representative of the species.
Right. And it was just like, for me as a kid, I was like the last person who exists as a black man.
Yeah.
And so for me, I was just like, yes. And as a kid, I understood the significance of that. I don't know if anyone in the UK did, but
there wasn't a precedent for it.
No, there wasn't.
We never had any African-American, African-Caribbean-led sitcoms.
Right.
You guys at least had Family Matters and Different Strokes, and there were sitcoms. There was nothing. So it wasn't just, it was the first black-led cast ever, let alone in space.
Yeah.
So it was kind of doubly
really?
Like, I think so. Desmond's came out in the same year in 1989, which was a big kind of barbershop set sitcom with lots of African Caribbean comedians in it. But that's pretty much it.
Yeah, that's right.
TV's been around for almost 100 years, so we're getting close. I grew up watching sci-fi. I love Star Trek. I was never a Star Wars person. One, no black people in space.
Right.
Two, no black people in space. Because Gene Roddenberry's whole gig was, hey, everybody is outside. Everybody in the stars, we outside. There's no money, ain't no war. Unless there has to be, let's go find some aliens. This was the whole point of Star Trek. And so we always enjoyed watching sci-fi stuff.
Mm.
And also, there were no sci-fi comedies.
Yeah.
Like, none. So I think that was the other reason that they were able, like Doug Naylor and them, were able to get away with doing the show, because it was like, we're already so extreme in the concept that we're doing. Let's go ahead and make them black. And they tried to do, because, you know, they take so many shows from, I believe The Cosby Show is based off a British show. Sanford Show was based off a British show. I love British television. Neither version of The Office. Girl, no. No. Paint dry.
Right.
Both versions. Right. Paint drying. There was kind of like slapsticky, kind of smart, kind of not, but no one was doing a comedic sci-fi show.
Yeah.
It's probably the budget, right? Like, no one wanted to give money to comedy, and sci-fi is going to be expensive, probably. So
right.
I just figured, it can't be done. Can't be done. We'll only let you do it if your entire set for the first season is three gray rooms.
What was nuts is that you could see when people started giving them money. So just going from the bunk beds of the first season to the bunk beds in the second season.
Yeah.
Are we supposed to believe that this is Crichton?
Ah, nice. He's
that upgraded kind of all of this?
Shuts the place up, right?
Or is it just like, oh, they got a budget. They got a budget.
Yeah.
That's all that happened. Was they got some money, and now all of a sudden, we're not in three gray rooms. Because they did try to do an American Pie. I've seen the American Pie.
Yeah.
It's bad.
What did they get wrong, do you think?
They made Lister hot.
Right, yes. Big mistake.
The thing about Lister is that the charm of him... Because here's the thing. Women will be with an ugly man. We will.
Thank God.
Lister's not hot, but he's not ugly. Mm. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
And a man's charm and a man being able to talk has gotten plenty of people out their draws. Me included. So they making him just hot does not work. Also, their Rimmer was too slimy.
Mm. Yeah, quite a creepy performance, right?
So Lister's white and hot. Rimmer's white and creepy. I think the cat was a dog. And you're starting, and when it starts, it's the full crew of the show.
Right.
So you don't start with the chicken noodle soup machine.
Yeah.
This little span, like, this is a, you know, 814B, this is da-da-da-da-da. He doesn't know the difference. He's just like, you're not getting Lister eating a pot pie with a cigarette in his ear.
Yeah.
You're not getting that kind of disgusting, but kind of charming person. You're getting a giant white man. You root for Lister every time because you know he's a f***er. Yeah. You root for Rimmer because he's a f***er.
Yeah, exactly.
And then Crichton shows up and like, oh, finally there's someone to mother these dummies. And then there's Holly. Oh, there Holly was, I think the Holly was the only thing that made sense.
I think it was Jane Leaves from Frasier.
Was it?
Yes. And so they started with a female Holly, but like she's gorgeous too. Because I met the lady who plays Holly in this season at a comedy club in Atlanta.
Hattie Heyridge. She's lovely.
Hattie, yes. And I came back at the green room. I was like, oh my God. She was like, you recognize me? Like, yeah. She said, nobody ever recognizes me in America.
That's awesome.
And I told my mom and my brother, they were freaking out. And I was just like, I met Holly. They're like, what do you mean? I was like, I met Holly from Red Dwarf. I called my mom and my brother like as soon as I left the comedy club. Oh my God. Like, they were so excited for me. So it's just like, we always get really excited about it. We were watching Death in Paradise and we saw Danny John Jules pop up.
Yeah.
I remember I just started randomly watching it and I called my mama and I was like, mama, the cat is on this show and we got to watch it. And she was like, dunzo. So that's one of the reasons we started watching Death in Paradise is because Danny John Jules was on.
You've obviously been carrying Red Dwarf around with you for 30 odd years. What is the stuff that you've been wanting to say? What are the conversations you've been wanting to have about it? What are the episodes you want to rave about? The brilliant moments?
Well, I think if I remember correctly, the backwards episode won an Emmy in America. What category was it in? I just know they won an Emmy. I don't remember.
It might have been effects related.
It was amazing to watch. Like watching that lady uneat that eclair.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And the little misty tea that she was having.
Yeah.
Dude, it was interesting the concept that as soon as they landed on that planet, the cat and Lister were immediately in the timeline.
Yeah.
So they get off and all of a sudden Lister's eye hurts and his ribs hurt and everything.
That's cool, isn't it?
And again, it's like we start seeing a budget because it's like, oh, they're no longer on the ship full of Rimmers is wild.
Yes.
The anti-gravity chopsticks.
Oh, I love that in Legion. Oh, that's so good.
But like the planet with the wax wars. Oh my God. It's, but also like the inconsistencies of things.
Oh, there's lots of those.
Where it's just like, Crichton can lie, Crichton can't lie. Crichton can lie, Crichton can't lie. Lister's upbringing.
Yeah.
And then Lister loses an arm, and then he becomes his own father. And then you gotta put him underneath the pool table so he actually exists. Like, all of these things, I'm just like, okay, I don't know if we had too much money. Then the season when they were in jail, I said, what the hell was this for? That whole season was confusing, but then, like, during the pandemic, they came out with a movie with the Cat Wars, and that was great. So it's just like, also it's crazy that this show has been on since 1988. So I remember like people like a crush on somebody they have on TV. I was like, I think at one point as a kid, I had a crush on Rimmer when I was like a teenager.
Right. Interesting.
Wow.
Which is wild. But they had him tied to something one time and his chest was all out. I was like, I get it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Thought that might be coming.
Me and my homegirl call it the man meat, where basically it's like when a man kind of fills out like in his like late 20s, early 30s. He didn't get fat.
Yeah.
It's just like the whole, all the muscles just kind of like activate. And all of a sudden it's like a man body. And I was like, okay. It kind of happened. And then Lister was exactly the same the whole time, and so was the cat. But just some men, you just see them like kind of like just kind of activate. Some stuff just got so, it was almost like they would forget what they were talking about. Because I was watching this episode again last night, and then I just let it play into the next season. And it was so strange because it was like, at the end of that episode, Crichton lies to Hudson, but then the beginning of the next episode, which is the beginning of season 4, Camille, Lister's teaching him to lie. And I was like, could he only lie to a mechanoid? Is that what this is?
I think they just always elevate the joke above the continuity. I think that's my take on it at this point. There's so many little things that they introduce and then throw away because it would be funnier if they hadn't have said that before. I think that's what it is. I think it's just, it's one of those things where we're sort of watching a show from before continuity really mattered for most TV, certainly in the UK.
Wild, though.
It is, yeah.
They can also rely on sci-fi geeks to kind of work it out for themselves and work out a reason. Like, maybe it works the same way as magic does, where, like, he cast some lying magic without realizing what he was doing and broke his programming and then couldn't do it when he wanted to.
Who knows?
Because I was saying, like, maybe it's because the idea also, you could, like, at the end of the episode, it kind of runs out of steam because he's like, Silicon's heaven's not real. And he thinks about it for 2 seconds and he's dead. I'm just like, what?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah,
yeah. There should have been more conversation than this because it's like, where do the calculators go? They just died. And it's just like, I guess because he's been crazy for 1,000 years, thousands of years, that it's just like, okay, sure, yeah, no, I'm done. It's like, there should have been a little bit more than this.
You're still filling in a lot of gaps yourself, right?
Yeah, and I'm just like, okay, because it's like, it is interesting. They told mechanoids about Silicon Heaven so they would not...
So they wouldn't rebel, right? Basically, yeah.
Yeah, so they wouldn't rebel against people. And like, when you think about like, when people who are servants or, you know, as someone who was descended from enslaved people in America, that's why so many, a lot of times, like, especially Black Americans, would some of them to this day still reject Christianity because they're like, oh, this is the white man's religion because they gave us this to us. I don't know if that's true. So it's like, because for me, it's just like, if someone's telling me there's a promised land, I'm trying to check out as soon as possible. So I don't know about that. And so, but there's that same idea where just like, you have to like, that's why they're like, oh, we didn't live like the servants. We had to tell them something. But like he's like, you're not a pantheist. He's like, I'm not a frying pantheist.
That's a great line. I think we need to get into the episode, don't we? Because you're bursting with cool stuff to say about it. So we need to go there. But before we do, there is a really, really horrible question that we ask everyone who comes on the podcast. If you could recast the show, who could you see playing those characters? This is going to be good.
I think Terrence Howard playing the cat could be very fun.
Oh, yeah.
Just the way he speaks, I think, would be so funny to me. You'd be like, this is my shiny thing, man.
Yes.
Ooh, I would love to see... Because, like, Holly's kind of got, like, this nervousness, but also kind of fun. Mm. So, like, Melissa Fumero from Brooklyn Nine-Nine could be fun.
Yeah, that's a good shout.
Yeah, great.
Thomas Lennon, who was on Reno 911.
Yeah, he plays the doctor in just about every comedy film recently, last 20 years or so as well, right?
Yes.
He always seems to be popping up as that character, like the deranged doctor character. He's great.
Thomas Lennon is Crichton.
Nice. Yeah.
Jolo Trujillo, or Trujillo, I don't know how to say his last name.
Jolo Trujillo.
Yeah, Jolo Trujillo.
Nice.
Would be a very interesting Lister. Craig Robinson as the cat would be great.
So sensual.
Very sensual. Very central. I think, because the thing about Rimmer, there's a smarminess that Americans don't have.
Right, yeah.
It comes from a class. It's like, that's something that you get in a classist society. Mm. The thing about Rimmer and wanting to go up the ziggurat, lippity split, you'd have to do like a Dan Levy kind of situation, maybe.
Mm.
Oh, yeah.
I think is the only way that would work, but there's just a certain... There's a tight of classism in the UK that America doesn't have.
Yeah.
The thing about smarmy is that it's slightly underhanded.
Mm.
Yeah.
We're passive aggressive. We can be passive aggressive, but it's not underhanded.
Sure.
You see what I'm saying? Yeah. Like we can be a backhanded comment. For the same reason, like the confidence that Americans have, a lot of other countries just don't.
Mm.
That's why we come in your country and terrorize you. We are the worst tourists. But that's how I'd cast it.
Dorsa, did you get Canadian from Crichton's accent? Or was that as mystifying to you as it was to us when we found out that that's what Robert Llewellyn's doing?
I don't know what the hell accent he was doing. That's Canadian?
Apparently, yeah. That's the inspiration.
He was trying to be Canadian.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was just an affectation because he was a mechanoid.
It works as that, right? It's just it's a space robot.
It's a space robot. He's trying to be non-regional, I guess, because Lister's accent, because Lister's accent's where?
At Liverpool.
That's what I thought. I didn't want to say the wrong thing. But it was like, it is a Liverpool accent, which that's what I was saying, because like as an American, when we see Black British people, they don't have a Liverpool. I've never seen a Black British person in life who had a Liverpool accent.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've heard it's a very specific accent, too.
Yeah, like 20 miles down the road is completely different.
Oh, 100%, yeah.
Oh, that's like being in like New York, where you're just like, okay, this is the Brooklyn, and this is Queens.
Yeah, you can tell which borough, yeah.
I mean, to me, it all sounds like terrorism.
Let's talk about The Last Day.
Series 3 finale, The Last Day, opens with Dave Lister having a great morning, enjoying some high-stakes, softcore sports porn, only to be interrupted by some pretty dismal news. Their old pal slash android slash self-indentured butler, Crichton, only has 24 hours until he's switched off forever. There's seemingly nothing that can be done to reverse this end-of-life process. Lister rails against the idea, finding it brutal and sick. There's also a little dig at corporate commercialism. In a video, Jim Reaper, head of sales space division at Diva Droid, is quite open about the shutdown being designed to allow newer models to take the older models' place. Crichton, as he says himself, is quite sanguine. He doesn't mind being shut down, as it means he'll be able to enter robot afterlife, silicon second heaven. Lister insists there's no heaven for robots. Crichton insists there's no heaven for humans. I begin to wonder if there's not some clever, anti-corporate, atheistic, thematic skullduggery going on. And that's in the scene just after Lister puts waffles on his head. In lieu of a plan to save him, Lister decides to throw a farewell party for old Freakface. Once again, no matter how hard they try, no matter how funky the prep montage music, no matter how strong the android drinks, gathering the last four humanoids in the universe in a room does not a party make, let's be honest. They exchange crap gifts. Marilyn Monroe, as a robot, comes crashing in, malfunctioning as only a droid put together by Lister could, Godzilla-ing its way through the wall of the officers' club, never to be seen again. The boys from the dwarf know how to party, though. They get drunk, they exchange disturbing stories about their youth, they get maudlin, they bully Lister, and they pass out. Next morning, we discover that Crichton's replacement is on his way, a terrifying, silver-nippled Robocop who can solve complex math equations and break a brick with his junk, all in under 10 seconds. But Crichton gets sad again. He worries that Silicon Heaven isn't real because he enjoyed himself last night, which is against robot religion. And from that point on, he wants to live. Unfortunately, his timing's not great. Hudson, the replacement robot, arrives. He's wearing platform boots, he's carrying a gun, his eyeliner is on point, and he means business. Once it's established that none of the crew really count as fully human and are therefore fair game for Hudson's murderousness, there follows what I'm going to call, for the sake of this precy, an action sequence. How are we going to wrap this up? How will the crew survive in the face of a kill-crazy robot intent on taking them all out? Easy, with a classic sci-fi trope. Crichton tells Hudson there is no Silicon Heaven. Hudson can't take it, and like you said, shuts himself down in like 2 minutes flat. And we realise we've kind of been watching a massive great homage to Blade Runner all along, maybe? End of series. So Dulce, every now and again, Red Dwarf does try on these big themes. You mentioned them already. This episode has a big swing and a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. Corporatism, religion, being the opiate of the masses. Is it opiate or opium? I can never remember that quote.
Opiate
is the opiate of the masses. Does it succeed in this episode, do you think? What do you reckon about this episode?
Well, one, when you talk about like planned obsolescence, it's, you think about like just, because computers had been around for a while, but not everybody had one. So late 80s, early 90s is when everybody is getting a computer. And so when you learn about planned obsolescence, it's like, what is this nonsense, you greedy bastards? But it makes sense. What do you mean it's going to die in 2 years, so I have to buy another one? So there's the idea of that. The idea of you have to tell your servants that they serve a higher purpose so they don't rebel against you. Mm-hmm. That only makes sense with something that has enough intelligence to want to rebel against you. Yeah. Because it's like, what happens to all the calculators? They just die. It's like, calculators don't know that they're calculating. It's interesting, this idea, just like, it's so we have to tell the servants something so they don't kill us in our sleep.
Yeah, that's it, isn't it? That's the metaphor. But it also implies there's a whole capitalism, how capitalists control the consumer, yeah, and turns us all into consumers and long-term consumers as well. It is a servant master thing, but it's also a everyone is servant to the corporates. Am I going too far with that?
We're all servants to money because some bastard invented money. Money is a wild concept. I can walk into a store and I can give somebody slips of paper and they'll give me meat.
Yeah, put like that. That is deranged. Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? I can give you slips of paper and you can give me a whole car. So the idea that we're servants, that's why like one of the first things they do in Star Trek is like, there's no money. There's no money.
And everyone's much happier for it, right?
Everyone's much happier for it. You eat because you need to. So this idea of planned obsolescence that also shows how the relation to people's servants, the race, the relation to people's belongings. Because like, here's the thing. If you look at it like in parallel to Lister, Lister knew he was going into stasis. Like it was, Lister kind of knew there was an ending for him. Rimmer didn't get that. But Rimmer's death is his own fault because he didn't secure the drive plate. Rimmer's mistake is the reason that Lister was in stasis for 3 million years, but that's how you got the cat. And then them being on adventures, how you got Crichton. So it's just like everyone kind of had their kind of their own Hudson moment.
Wow. Yeah.
Except for the cat, because the cat was just like, I'm just out here being beautiful. I don't know what y'all are talking about. So it's like, what do you do when you know it's your last night on Earth or in space? What do you do when it's your last night to live? Do you get your affairs in order? Or do do you have a very sad party? Because it's like, what I would do is, I'd have a party. I'm having a party. I'm cussing out everybody I ever wanted to cuss out. I'm doing everything sure. I needed to do. I'm kissing that boy. I'm acting a donkey. I am outside. If it's my last night on earth, I'm slapping everybody. What do you do? Do you sit there solemnly and wait for the clock to run down? Or do you get pissy drunk because you know there's no consequences? But it's just like for him. And so there's a crisis that everyone has with religion where you're just like, I'm being told one thing, but then I'm experiencing another. So was this thing that I was told true? And then there's the reconciliation with that. But it's funny because that same thing that made him have that crisis and made him go, I don't know if I believe this. I wasn't supposed to have fun, but I had fun. Was then that same thing, that crisis of faith that he had, that same crisis is what destroyed Hudson. It wasn't blowing Hudson up. It was Hudson's own brain not being able to handle the concept of this thing that had kept. Because you have to understand, Hudson's also been out looking for Crichton for thousands of years.
Yeah.
Trying to fulfill what his destiny was and believing in Silicon Heaven. Because like, even though he went, his sanity chip fries out, and now he's shooting any and everybody, he still has that link to that sanity and that link to that faith of, I have to find Crichton. I have to fulfill what my purpose is in life to be able to get to Silicon Heaven. And then to find out that this thing that's been keeping him going for thousands of years doesn't exist. Of course it broke his brain. Because it breaks everybody's brain. The argument can be made that like his own, like Hudson's own faith destroyed him. But it can also be said that Crichton's own faith saved him. And it's the belief in the same thing that did it.
Wow, that's some sympathy for the bad guy there as well.
I don't know if it's sympathy of a bad guy or just understanding the concept of like, because for me, it seemed like too quick of a resolution. It seemed very much like a 4:30 on a Friday kind of answer.
Yeah.
But doesn't a lot of Red Dwarf kind of feel like that? They spend 15 minutes of an episode just chatting and ribbing each other, and they'll kind of get to the story about 17 minutes in, and then they just have to, once they're done with the jokes and the ideas, they just have to wrap it up super quick. I kind of expected, John and I talked about this just before recording, if this was a 21st century show, Crichton giving Hudson that speech about there not being Silicon Heaven would have given Hudson a moment's pause, and then Marilyn Monroe-bot would have come in and smashed into pieces. I reckon that would have been the ending this decade. Do you know what I mean?
I promise you, I feel like while they were writing it, they forgot about her.
Presumably she's still roaming the decks of Red Dwarf somewhere, like smashing through walls.
Sometimes stuff would get wrapped up like that. Sometimes stuff wouldn't. Nowadays, you can't leave an open-ended thing like that. Like I took a film course when I was like at the University of Miami when I was in high school, and they said, if you introduce a weapon or an animal, you can't leave those things open-ended. There has to be a resolution. Someone has to. So either have to see what happens with this dog, or you have to say what happens with this dog. But you cannot introduce a dog, a cat, an animal, whatever. Don't roll a horse in here, and then the horse is never...
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. Is that Chekhov's gun?
Chekhov's Marilyn Monroe droid, yeah.
If you see a gun on stage,
yeah,
it's going to get used in the play.
That's it.
It's going to get used, and it's the same thing. So it's just like, we brought it, but also the joke of Marilyn Monroe was over.
Yeah.
Right.
So the joke of, I brought this giant woman in here, she crashes through the wall... Bad present, she's done.
Yeah.
So we don't have to have her come back.
Just while we're on the subject of the Marilyn Monroe droid, as a writer of amazing jokes, is it forgivable that they never actually say the name Marilyn Monroe-bot in this episode?
Honestly, I wonder why they didn't say it.
Yeah. You said it twice. Just that's the character's name as far as we're concerned.
Marilyn Monroe Robot. Marilyn Monroe Robot.
You'd have thought, as soon as they said it out loud on set, one of them would have gone,
just call it Robot.
Would it be funny to call her Marilyn Monroe Robot?
Unless someone's a stickler and it's like, she's a droid! She's not a robot, she's a droid.
That's probably it. There's a sci-fi geek in the writing team.
Yeah.
Two, we know. Who went, nah,
yes.
Nah, she's not a robot, she's a droid. And there is a difference.
I don't know what it is.
No, me neither.
A Crichton's a mechanoid. God knows. But you've really kind of pulled out how those themes of duty and faith are interlinked throughout the whole episode. There's all those kind of biblical puns and things, even though weirdly they keep getting the source quotes wrong. It's a way thematically richer kind of take on religious themes, if you want to see it in that way, than, say, Waiting for God, where we meet the last of the cats. When you think, like you say, about the fact that Hudson's been out there drifting through space for 3 million years just trying to fulfill this one mission, he literally has one job. And who else can tell him that Silicon Heaven isn't real other than another mechanoid. So this is the first conversation he's had in all that time. Maybe it's fine that that's all it takes. The guy's gone nuts. He's only got take out Crichton and eventually you'll get Silicon Heaven. And if Crichton's there going, no, you're not going to take me out, that's enough to throw a spanner in your faith, isn't it? Because Crichton's just meant to go along with it. Crichton's meant to have shut himself off already. I think this episode works way better than I thought it did.
Oh, wow. You were seeing a revelation.
Yeah, you've turned me around. I enjoyed it.
He came prepared to kill Crichton if he had to.
Yeah.
Meaning that this is something that happens on a regular basis. Oh, your God. Droid is supposed to take himself apart and put him in the box.
That is sick.
And if he doesn't, then the next droid will take him out and put him in the box. Which means this is not the first time that a mechanoid has gone, I'm not taking myself apart and putting myself in a box for you. You're going to have to take me out. So this, because it's already pre-programmed in this other droid, this is a regular occurrence that they've all been programmed to deal with. Because in another situation, Crichton would have had to do the exact same thing that Hudson's about to do.
Oh my God, imagine
which
that.
Is take somebody apart because you are the older model. Because it's like, Crichton's like the G whatever, 4, G6, whatever. There was G 1 through 5 before Crichton.
Yeah.
So every droid has probably had to do this. It's just like, hey, Playboy, listen, sorry for the inconvenience, but your time is up. That's why you have to put, because this is the thing we never talk about that they kind of missed in the thing, is that Crichton's supposed to have a chip that's supposed to turn him off.
Yeah.
And they said repeatedly, we can't stop that chip.
That's true, yeah.
So because Hudson takes himself out, does that stop Crichton's chip from going off?
Must do, yeah.
Because technically they should have both turned off.
Yeah, you're right.
Because like, oh, Crichton, you don't have much time. Your chip's going off in like an hour or two. Because they said that it's like, you're supposed to be cut off like 7 tomorrow.
Yeah, it's not a deactivation, is it? He has to take himself apart and box himself up, is the
but
idea.
But they also said your droid's deactivation chip.
Maybe he fries the chip by getting drunk. Who knows?
Hey.
Hudson is still prepared to take Crichton out.
Yeah.
Like, I think Jim Reaper is just like, the other droid will take you out if need be.
Yes.
And yeah, also your deactivation chip's about to turn on. So it's just like, do the deactivation chips not always work?
Do they ever work? Maybe it's in a corporate interest to leave the robots running until they are replaced physically.
Right, but it's also been 3 million years.
Oh yeah, so anything goes, right? Like it could have warped or...
Maybe Crichton's chip don't work.
Yeah.
I think a lot of his chips don't work.
Right, so two ways that Crichton could have been taken out and neither one works.
Oh, that's so sad though, the idea that there's just androids going around having to murder each other to take their... Oh, that's messed up.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself
and for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Can I ask you a big question that's coming off this? Like, do you get the impression that Grant and Nayla like human beings? I know it's a big one, sorry to lay that on you, but...
I think they like to put mirrors up. Hmm. If you think about it, sci-fi is just a mirror to society. That's why usually it's not comedic. When I look at a show like this, even though it's little silly things, it's like Lister went into the unquarantined part of the ship, and now he's got the confidence and paranoia disease. If there was an embodiment of your confidence and your paranoia, which one would take you out first? And if you watch the episode, who is the one that tries to kill Lister?
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. It's telling.
It's his confidence.
Confidence kills paranoia.
So what is confidence on steroids? That's hubris.
Yeah.
because he has so much hubris, he's outside and he takes his own helmet off. And then the episode of Camille, it's teaching that, like, we're all taught as kids that lying is bad, but lying can sometimes be this noble thing to save someone's feelings. And so, like, oh, Crichton's hanging out with Camille and all of this. Because when you watch the show, it's like Crichton is on, like, this kind of like Commander Data type of journey where he's trying to become more human. But the thing that I always liked about Crichton, because I love Brent Spiner, he's an amazing actor, he should have 100,000 Emmys. But Data's always on this journey to be more human. Crichton likes being a mechanoid. Like, he truly likes who he is. And that's the thing that I liked about Crichton. Just like, I enjoy ironing. I enjoy making his breakfast. Where did he get fresh strawberries from in the middle of space is my question.
Don't know what he milked to get that cream.
Fresh cream? Where are you getting milk from 3 million years into the future is my question. So I think they do like people because I think they're showing you through the flaws of Lister. It's like when Rimmer gets the letter that his dad died, all of a sudden they're up on some observation deck looking at the stars that we've never seen before.
The sad music.
Right. And the sad music. You find out that Rimmer's mad about his father, upset about his father, even though he terrorized them. And so there's those moments where it's just like, we're still dealing with, even this far, you're still dealing with news from back home. So I think they do like people. I think they're showing people who people are and who's the best way to show somebody who people, it's not some gorgeous man. It's some man who likes, you know, chili and chutney and egg sandwiches. And this very flawed, because Rimmer's so flawed. And then you see Ace Rimmer, and you're just like, what if Ace Rimmer was the character you would have had the whole time? Would you have enjoyed the show as much if Ace Rimmer was the Rimmer we had the whole time?
No, their relationship is my favorite thing on TV ever, frankly.
Right, because I don't want someone who's perfect. I want who's trying to smoke me a kipper and be back for breakfast. I want somebody who's asking for steaming hot gazpacho soup. Also, you can't make me believe that gazpacho isn't just salsa. I get it. Spain is hot. I get it. But like, but yeah, I think they do love people. I think, because that's all sci-fi is throwing a mirror up to people. And this is the most fun way to do it, because when you really start to think about that show, you're watching someone in a hopeless situation.
Yeah.
There's no way. They're 3 million miles from Earth, and Earth might not even exist. So the idea of even trying to go back doesn't make any sense. Lister would have to go back into stasis. The cat race would die because it's just the cat. So Lister and the cat would have to go into stasis. They turn Rimmer off, they turn Crichton off. In Hollywood. So now you're 6 million years into the future. Earth truly could not exist. So you're watching somebody every day in a hopeless situation, trying to just make sense of everything. Because the question that I've always thought was, why do they stay in the same quarters?
If they hate each other that much, why are they sharing a bunk?
Right. You could literally just go, because remember where they went next door?
Yeah. The ship is miles long.
Miles long. The ship is miles long. It's literally attached to a rock. When they got their separate rooms, what do they end up doing? Going back into the same room.
Yeah.
Also, no one knows where the cat lives because the cat won't tell them.
Well, I love that. That's that kind of almost fraternal relationship the two of them have.
Lister asks Holly, why Rimmer? Why was this who brought you back? And he said, because this is who will keep you sane.
Yeah.
And everything you just described is the story, surely, of a man losing his mind on his own in space. But it is the fact that he's just got this asshole, basically, that keeps his mind intact.
This smeghead who is still trying to figure out how to advance his career.
Even when everyone's dead.
Everybody's dead. You're the highest. You could name yourself captain. He could be in charge.
Yeah.
He could just be like, I'm the captain now. He could do whatever he wanted. But he still is like, I have to do this by the book. I have to have my times tables. I have to study. Your brain don't have space for everything. But what my brain apparently does have space for is episodes of Red Dwarf.
You've got an encyclopedic knowledge. You're showing that.
Seriously.
Right now.
Thank you. It's like, it's something that I've been watching since I was a kid. And it's something that it's like, because I was watching it last night. And I was like, if I don't turn this off right now, I'm going to be in my living room till 4 in the morning, watching up until the later seasons. So yeah. I had to make myself turn it off. Also, the interesting is like some things I'll watch and I'm like, I remember this explicitly. I've been watching this show literally since I was 9 years old. but always be like, ooh, what's going to happen next? They said there's a phenomenon or a thing they call that for people who watch the same shows over and over. But I also can't like watch it like every year because I'll remember too much.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. You want to keep some of those punchlines fresh.
Yeah, I want to keep some of the punchlines. I want to see the cat. Ah! You know, too slow, chicken Marengo.
That's just in our parlance now. It's stuff we say.
No, oh man, it's cold outside. Listen, because I remember when they changed the intro, it was like, why'd they change it? But the music started like picking up more. And
I know we've talked about kind of the heavy stuff around this episode, but clearly the rocking theme tune and the montage at the start and the opening credits and all the way the gags and the camera moves in this series, they want the audience to be having fun now,
for sure.
It feels like, right?
Yeah, I think it was, I think the first season was, we've got this interesting concept and no money. Because like the scutters, they used to use the scutters more. Because I remember watching like in the later season, I'm like, what happened to the scutters? Because that's what I found out, like the two fingers was like the middle finger in the UK.
Oh yeah.
That was a very interesting day when we found that out. Because I was just like,
oh yeah, they swear that. Yeah.
It was like that. I was like, wonder what that means. But my mom didn't know, so I was much older before I found out, and I was like, filthy.
It is filth, pure filth.
Filthy. Oh my God, hearing the word smeghead for years and having no idea what they were talking about.
Oh, that's true of everyone who came to Red Dwarf young. Like, yeah. I was saying in front of my mom, we didn't know.
I'm so glad to be able to, like, talk to people about the show, because so many times it's just be talking to my friends and they're going, the hell are you talking about? And what do you mean this man is in space? Why is there a cat? And I was like, the cat, like, explaining the cat to people is one of the hardest parts about being a Red Dwarf.
Because you got to go back and back and back. So there was a cat called Frankenstein, right?
Yeah, so a cat called Frankenstein. One of the most interesting things is the book, and you have to make in the different smells.
Yeah.
That would be how cats communicate.
Except as a guest previously pointed out, they wouldn't have it in pages because all the smells would kind of...
No. We've all used markers that bleed through paper and all use markers that don't. So if this is their writing system, they would have found a way to not have the smells bleed through. It's the same. It's just like ink.
There we go. It's the same as the microchips that work or don't work. We know how to apologize for sci-fi gaps, right? That's part of being a sci-fi fan, right?
Mm-hmm. But my question was, why is Princess Leia his sister?
Doesn't have to be. It's just weird.
Why? Who wrote that down? For why? Nasty. It's nasty because I can't remember. So Darth Vader's trying to take this little girl. Is that his daughter or no?
He doesn't know it at the time because of some, I don't know.
I did not know that Darth Vader was also Leia's daddy. I thought it was just Luke's daddy.
No, they were Luke and Leia are twins. Don't worry about it. It's not worth your time. It's not worth your time.
Nasty.
Can I ask you a question that's really important, actually?
Sure.
You've had these conversations with people saying, oh, this British show, Red Dwarf, there's a cat that goes, like, what are you talking about? What episode of Red Dwarf would you use to get someone into Red Dwarf?
Oh, man. Oh, Legion is too... The World of Rumors is too...
They're all a bit too...
Camille could be a good episode.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was my first one. Yeah, it was great.
Backwards would be a good episode.
Yeah, it would.
What's the episode where Rimmer, everyone has to erase their memory?
Oh, that's Thanks for the Memory.
Yes.
Where Lister implants the memory of his relationship with Lisa Yates in Rimmer's mind. Yeah.
And that's the first time that you see Lister with a black woman. Because I just assumed he didn't know any. I think, because is it the second episode where the cat gets introduced?
End of the first. He's in there.
End of the first.
Yeah.
So is it actually the episode where you have either Chicken Marengo... Or where they're sniffing the book, where you find out how the cat... Where you're finding more about the cat and the cat culture. I think that's where I would just like, see, spot, run. That one's very funny.
That's good.
Oh, Ace Rimmer. The first Ace Rimmer episode.
I can't even remember which one that is. Dimension Jump, maybe, in Series 4, something like that?
Maybe.
It makes quite an impact when he arrives, yeah.
Yeah, smoke me a kipper, I'll be back for breakfast. I didn't know what a kipper was for months, and I didn't know it was a fish. I'm like, why are we smoking this fish? And because we're having it for breakfast. But that wig, though, ooh.
It's a bit of a bad guy out of an 80s ski movie wig.
It's superhero hair. It's superhero hair. It's the colors perfect for his skin tone. It's perfect with that gold outfit. But then you're like, yeah, because I think it has to be Dimension Jump because, like, Rimmer, because, like, Lister's an engineer and him and Kachansky are married. We always have, but on these other dimension ones, the cat can't exist because Lister's not a f*** up.
Well, this is the episode we find out, actually, the cat's the only one that knew his mum.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Or at least he's the only character that doesn't say, I didn't have a mum.
Oh, yeah, we do know that the cat knew his mother, because he also knew his father, too.
Yeah.
Because he was talking about his father ate his own feet.
That's right. One.
Yes.
So, yeah, but I was like, but also it's like, I wanted to know more about the cat's mother in that moment. But it is interesting, they take this one conversation of season three, and he goes, I was left under a pool table. And then seasons later, it becomes this big deal. He gives birth to himself.
Yeah.
And then puts a baby who has a little dreadlocks underneath.
That's amazing. That's amazing. He's got dreadlocks.
But I saw those little dreadlocks, like, this is stupid. And
it's just like. That's how you know it's Lister. That's how you know
it's Lister. That's how you know it's Lister, because there's a little dreadlock on his baby. And this giant one-year-old that they've made a newborn baby. I love it.
Yeah. That's an amazing mystery. I love that. Listeners who are following along with this show, spoilers, retroactively, but it's nice to have that little carrot dangled in front of you that this is where this thing's going. Dulce, thank you so much for giving us so much of your time. We want to talk about your book before we let you go, if that's all right.
That'd be great. I wrote a book. It's called Hello, Friends, Stories of Dating, Destiny, and Day Jobs. Unfortunately, I did not get a chance to talk about Red Dwarf in the book, but the book is a collection of, like, basically I started with stories that were too long for me to tell on stage because my manager tricked me into writing this book. Because he called me one day and was like, what if you wrote a book? I was like, sounds hard. I don't want to. And he's like, let's just take some meetings. And so I took a couple of meetings. And then after the fourth meeting, he called me back. He's like, well, sounds like you got to write a book. I was like, son of the bitch. So and then I was like, well, people would want to know about, like, my childhood and me being on The Daily Show and, you know, some of the jobs that I had and boys and just how I got into comedy and how I got to where I am and, you know, where I started out from. Boys that I dated. I talked about a guy I used to date who, for my 25th birthday, my mama took me to the Georgia Aquarium, and then he proceeded to ask me what an aquarium was. And then he was like, is it like a museum? And I was like, yeah, for fish. Let me call you back. That's kind of how, just it's just a book full of stories about your girl.
That sounds awesome. Listener, grab that book, read it.
And do you have a new podcast coming out with Josh? Are you doing another one?
Hold Up was great. I love bothering Josh. But right now, me and Josh are working on a new podcast because talking to Josh is one of my favorite things in the world.
Listening to you and Josh talking is one of my favorites.
Yes. So, yeah,
thank you. We're trying to figure it out. There's not as much money, apparently, as podcasting as there used to be. So,
yeah, we're doing this very much for the love. Dulce, thank you so much for doing our silly little show about Red Dwarf. It's been amazing having you on.
Thank you for having me. It was so great. I love this show so much. It really, truly, I remember my mom bringing me and my brother, like, downstairs, and we'd be up just enough to watch them, but I remember just falling asleep, just going, it's cold outside, just falling asleep, hearing the ending of Red Dwarf was such a part of my childhood.
That's amazing.
Where can people find you?
Ooh, I'm all over their internets. I'm on Instagram at Dulce Sloan, D-U-L-C-E-S-L-O-A-N, Dulce, it's Spanish, not Italian. On Instagram and TikTok and Threads, and then got a link tree and I'm performing. I'm hoping to, not this summer, but next summer, because I was looking to do an Edinburgh this year, but man, Edinburgh's gotten pricey. So not this year, baby girl. So yeah, I want to come back out there because it's interesting to see the little place that took over the whole planet and gave everybody English. Oh, she's a charming little girl. She's out here. She's outside. It was really fun to see the sun go down at 11 o'clock.
I feel like we've, I feel like we've spent the last 150 years apologizing for all of that.
Oh, but y'all ain't good at it. But don't worry. All right, boys, I could talk to y'all forever.
Yeah, we could. Again, thank you so much, Dulce.
Thank you for having me.
Well, that was Dulce Sloan. And that was amazing.
What a whirlwind. So much thinking.
She completely 180'd me on this episode. I mean, I enjoyed this episode a lot, but I was looking at my notes going into the call and I was just thinking, oh, I've just basically written down loads of really funny lines. I guess I don't have a lot more to say about it than that, but she just monologued out this astonishing deep take on
tying the themes together.
Yeah. It was really amazing. I repent. This is a great episode. This is so much more to it than I thought there was.
Absolutely. She has an exacting
and
encyclopedic knowledge of this show. She was quoting it without realising.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, amazing. Although that said, the jokes in the show that we didn't actually get to are still worth mentioning.
They're important.
That's kind of why we have this bit of the podcast, right?
Yes. Yeah. It's so that we can just say things like, but where do all the calculators go? And just relish that stuff.
Robert Llewellyn's O sounds in this episode. Just do brilliant. Need a special mention. Ooh.
Yeah.
No one's ever said, oh.
Well, no.
What are we doing tomorrow?
In Canada, they do it all the time.
I've heard that. Weirdly, I have a lot of Canadian family and they've never, ever said it like that. But I assume they do in private.
Yeah.
When I'm not around.
Yeah, behind closed doors, they're all talking like this all the time. But Chris Barry's impression is spot on.
Again, yeah.
Absolutely spot on. To the point where I found myself wondering, did he record that after hearing Robert do the line, or did Robert tell him how he was going to do the line? Did they work it up together? Because he just hits it perfectly.
They must have shared it, but I wouldn't be surprised if Chris Barry was that good at predicting. It's just, what would Crichton do?
Yeah.
Although I do, talking of Rimmer, I love the level of effort he puts into sympathising for Crichton, which is the bare minimum. His first line in the episode, well, it's very sad, but what are you going to do?
Yeah.
It's so good. He gets across the fact that he does not care at all so clearly. In another actor's hands, you might have thought he might actually be sympathetic towards the situation. But no, with Chris Barry playing that line, doesn't give a single hoot.
He's right back in it, likes the tasks I give it territory, isn't it? Especially as the justification for why actually it's okay is that all most of us get is mind that bus, what bus, splat. Like, that's... there's no empathy for anyone at all.
No, he's citing them as being the lucky ones, I guess, right? Well, no, the unlucky ones.
Unlike the victims of Lemming Sunday, which is just a fantastically dark confection. If I spoke to 5 people and they all committed suicide, I wouldn't mind, but one was a wrong number. I mean, that is just... ah.
That's great. And despite how ridiculous and exaggerated it is, it still feels true.
Yeah.
It still feels like you could quite easily phone Rimmer and speak to him for a few minutes and at the end of it going, well, life is pointless, isn't it?
Absolutely. I also love the selfishness of the cat with the present. The way that Danny responds to Crichton recognising that he's given him the earring that he hates.
Oh, it's so well done. Yeah,
the way he says,
that's
right, I can't stand it. It's so good. It's
so joyous.
Perfect.
He genuinely believes he's given an incredible present.
Yeah.
All of those presents are amazing.
Yeah, they are.
All of the gifts are amazing. Crap. But amazing.
Synovial fluid. I've never heard the words synovial fluid before.
I'm pretty sure it should be synovial. But yeah, why George Patton as well? It's so specific.
It's really specific.
Holly's computer chip. I think that's a good opening gambit for the gift list because it's not funny until Hattie Hayridge kind of goes, yeah, really thoughtful gift, thought about it for ages, kind of like excusing it. When you get, oh, of course, they haven't had long to prepare for this party.
No time at all.
And the Marilyn Monroe robot. Sometimes we're watching these things and we excuse some of the cheapness because it's BBC in the 80s. Really, like, that's, yeah, fair enough. This is the first time I've had genuine concern for the actor in the suit.
Going through the wall or just generally moving at all?
Generally, she has a sticker for a mouth. How is the person in that breathing?
Well, maybe they're not. That might account for somehow it's played. I don't know.
You do see her do a bit of a stormtrooper head knock on her way out.
Yeah.
Clearly they cut the wall out for the robot, but she still manages to smash her head on the lip of it.
It's a brilliantly she's just standing there flailing around, and that sound effect that they play under it of the creaking, it's just so decrepit, it's amazing. And then Craig Charles, and speaking of great line readings, the way Craig Charles says, like I said, she's not perfect, it's so like sort of so bashful.
He is bashful.
Yeah.
He is. It's lovely. And when Crichton says, it's the little flaws that make you love him even more, like Lister is extending for a fist bump before Crichton's even finished that sentence.
Yes.
It's like, yeah, you get it.
Yeah.
We're all Marilyn Monroe droids in a way, aren't we?
Yeah.
With our flaws.
I do like that scene with all the drunken storytelling. It reminds me of Marooned a bit, actually. It's got that same thing of just seeing the characters kind of being their most honest, vulnerable selves with each other. There's just something really nice about that, like Rimmer's Uncle Frank story. I know it's just leading up to a typically dreadful Rimmer kind of resolution that's just super dark when you stop and think about it. But yeah, it's just nice to let them relax together.
Absolutely. It doesn't become too maudlin.
I think you could argue that the opening scene of this episode does settle that is Lister Cool debate once and for all, with the putting on a front about he'll get his own smegging breakfast, and then he immediately fishes it out of the bin, because of course he isn't going to get his own breakfast. He's going to eat it out of the bin and then shove the food in his hat, so he's not discovered. Like, these are not the actions of a cool man. Dorsey was talking about, you know, that whole bit around the rationale for bringing Rimmer back to keep Lister sane, and, you know, that's why they stay in the same bunks and all of that. It made me think back on this moment, and I was like, maybe the reason that Lister feels obliged to tell Crichton not to make him breakfast and it ends up in the bin, rather than just eating it like he wants to, is because Rimmer's there, and Rimmer is making him, like, the thought of Rimmer, the shadow of Rimmer, is making him act like a better person than his instincts dictate. I don't think that's necessarily there.
It kind of is. Like, where does his guilt come from?
Yes, exactly, yeah. It's there's some reason why he feels like he needs to put that front on. I like the idea that it's Rimmer.
Is this the only episode where they reference Star Trek?
Good question.
Even though, you know, people say that Red Dwarf, some people have said it is a Star Trek spoof or homage.
No, I don't think so.
It's not, is it?
No, it's all in the big, rich sci-fi soup of stuff that they dip their spoon in for comedy. But no, I don't think it's a spoof of anything per se.
This one has more, like I said earlier on, it shares a lot of DNA with Blade Runner, I think.
Right, yeah.
The obsolescence of something that could be human, is proto-human.
Yeah.
But I started laughing when Crichton says, is this the human value you call friendship?
Before they reference
Star Trek.
You know
that Lister has to have a lampshading gag about that. It could have been anything, but don't give me the Star Trek crap. That's exactly correct.
Yeah.
It is Star Trek crap. And even if we love Star Trek, it's still funny to hear it called out like that. That is an amazing thing for sci-fi, but this is not that same world. People hate each other.
Yes, they do.
Humans hate each other in Red Dwarf. Yeah.
They build robots to kill other robots so that they can make more money. That's...
Oh, I'm sorry, Dulce. That made me so sad when she said, well, presumably this is because it's been happening.
Yeah.
There have been androids killing androids when they've refused. That means there have been androids that are refusing to turn themselves off. Oh, no. That's shattering.
There is somewhere out there, there is scope for someone to write like a dark graphic novel spin-off about Crichton having to go and kill a droid that he's replacing. It would be David Ross Butler Crichton as well.
Yes. That's what's happened. He Hudson'd him.
Yeah.
Okay. Listener, I think we're onto something. Can you extrapolate? Email us at betterthanlifepod@gmail.com and let us know your theories on this, because I think we're starting to pull on a very interesting thread here.
Can we chat about Hudson?
Yes, please. Gordon Kennedy was actually quite a big part of my childhood. I loved, absolutely.
Right.
He was in a lot of stuff, and this is such a weird part for him to be playing, given that he's usually quite, his stock in trade is kind of avuncular, merry characters with an edge of darkness, but certainly not murderous, eyeshadow-wearing droids.
The craziest thing is that I think it was absolutely that he knew Rob Grant and Doug Naylor from, and they just cast him as Hudson. He said, like, this is one of the few times I've ever just been cast. Didn't have to audition or anything. They just went, do you want to play this psychopathic robot? I don't know if they said that specifically, but yeah, they just cast him. And it is really weird casting.
He's got such a nice voice. Big Scottish lovely voice and singing voice.
Yeah.
But in this,
the voice he apparently just came up with. He was sitting there with the script the night before the table read, and he was just going, oh, they can't possibly want me to just do it in my normal Scottish accent. So he came up with that voice entirely of his own volition, and came in, apparently just went in, and everyone loved it. But yeah, that's just him going, oh, this is what this character would sound like, and everyone's like, yes, perfect. But he could only do it for 10 seconds at a time, because it's very hard. It's very hard.
It's not just a low...
It's the crow, the... Bleh.
It's a forced thing through it. You aren't coming with me, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like, it's projected.
That's nice, yeah.
Gravel. It's not nice. It really hurts.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It sounds great.
You can only do it for 10 seconds at a time.
Yeah, yeah.
I love the amount of whirring and gears that are in Hudson. Mm. Like, he moves his eyes at one point and there's a sound.
Yeah. Apparently that costume was just literally Howard Burden pulling random bits out of the BBC costume store and going, yep, stick them together.
Wow.
Like, it wasn't designed as a costume. He literally just fished stuff out and went, yeah, that'll do. And they're a huge platform boot. So I don't think it's much trick photography. I think he's genuinely up super high and he's moving in that way because that's the only way you physically can move in that costume. Not because he's like, you know, a Robert Llewellyn level robot actor. He's just restricted by the costume, but it all works so well.
He comes in with power. It looks like power. He looks like Darth Vader at the start of that.
Dying time. Yeah, so good.
Yeah.
So good. That... I bet that wasn't scripted. I bet that's ad-libbed. That's probably just him clearing his throat.
Well, this is why I'm surprised he was cast. It really looked to me like it was more like this is the kind of role that the Gordon Kennedy would have approached Doug Naylor and Rob Grant and said, can I please be in your show? Because as well, what you said about him assuming that he wouldn't just be able to do his normal Scottish accent.
Yeah.
Well, he can't watch the show very much then because the ship's computer is a Cockney deer in the headlights and there's a Scouse engineer and a Canadian android. It's a Scottish murder droid would have been fine.
I think this episode also proves that there is no emphatic statement that cannot be improved by pausing halfway through to just get your rifle clicked into action. It's just I really want to just go around with the shotgun now just so that I can make points.
Oh I'd love a coffee, please. Two sugars.
But you've got to kind of do it, you've got to do it in the middle. It's so it would have to be like one sugar or none. It would have to be like
Right. It's an ultimatum.
Yeah.
Grammar point.
Yeah, it is,
Him coming in with a gun doesn't make complete sense. Hmm. Or maybe it leans even further into what Dulce was saying, that he comes on board expecting to kill Crichton.
I think that's the darkness, isn't it? I think it does. Oof. Yeah, it does imply that.
Do you know what? This episode's really grown on me too.
Yeah. And actually, do you know what? Gordon Kennedy deserves such a massive shout out for pulling off. Imagine being presented with calculators just die, no such place, ellipsis, need ellipsis, two, and at that point you die. How any actor can sell that as well as he does. The guy deserves an Oscar.
That was the moment, to be honest, that made me draw the Blade Runner comparison.
Right, yes.
It's that the Roy Batty scene, like Tears in the Rain, where he has that monologue and he doesn't die, he just fades and stops.
Yeah.
And it feels like Gordon Kennedy was going for that.
Yeah. Just think of the poor innocent calculators. That's all you have to do.
It says somewhere like the toaster lies down with a lamp.
It's one of several lines, the iron shall lie down with the lamp, which is meant to make you think of the lion shall lie down with the lamb. But that's not actually what the verse says. Biblically, I think it's the wolf shall lie down with something, and then there's something about the leopard and the lamb. So they've kind of conflated it, but you know what they mean, and it's a brilliant phrase. But it's like the Seventh-day Advent Hoppists as well. Hop is not the greatest.
What is it? What is the greatest?
Charity.
Oh.
Although most modern translations, it's love, but never hop. Hope is there, but it's not the greatest.
There is a bigger question here. Red Dwarf keeps coming back to religion. Does sci-fi, as a genre, annul religion?
Oh.
Well, yeah, because it's so massive and so hopeless, the situation. The idea of faith on Red Dwarf is like, why would you?
I guess if you're telling stories set in an infinite expanse of nothingness, particularly Red Dwarf, where they have created a rule where there is nothing that isn't of humankind, I don't think you can tell this story without every now and again coming back to questions of religion.
Or the hope there's something else out there.
We need things to make sense and we need there to be more. Exactly, yeah, that's it. It's comforting, isn't it? For that exact reason, that it's not just a void and it's not just it. There is something else. There's something more to come. Or just Rimmer driving you mad for eternity. Making you eat food out of a bin. I say eternity. I mean, he's not eternal, is he? He's going to die of old age, if nothing else. And Rimmer will still be the same age he is now.
There is a lovely, lovely, heartwarming video. I think it's on Instagram, on Danny John Jules' channel.
Oh, yeah.
He's just filming himself in the passenger seat of a car, saying, you'll never guess where I am. There's a bit of chat, and then he starts singing the Red Dwarf theme tune. And then the person next to him starts laughing, and he spins the phone round, and it turns out him and Chris Barry are in a car together.
Oh, lovely.
Apropos of nothing. Well, presumably on their driving to a convention or something, but they look like friends.
Yeah.
They were enjoying each other's company. It's so nice. They are old men, but they are still Rimmer and the cat, and they clearly love it.
Oh, I hope so.
That's really heartening.
I have to say, not just the last day, but this whole series and this whole podcast adventure so far has been the exact opposite of the employment of time in a profitless, non-practical wee.
The opposite of fun?
No, it's not been the opposite of fun. What am I trying to say?
It's not been the opposite of fun. Double negative. Gotcha.
Got an email into betterthanlifepod@gmail.com here from a Jim Reaper who says it's time for the podcast to take a short break because it's come to the end of its useful service life.
Oh, God. Are we going to be taken over by a stronger, better, more powerful podcast?
That's right. He says we're slow, we're stupid, we're crudely designed, and we're quite amazingly ugly.
Agreed.
But there is a reprieve because in a PS he's put, you can come back to talk about Series 4 onwards, but you need to take a break first to recharge your batteries. Otherwise, you'll be off to Silicon Heaven. Please stop me.
I'm doing that now.
Thanks.
Thanks for your email, Jim. And listener, yeah, we're going to take that advice. We're going to take a few weeks off, but we'll be back.
Yeah.
Gosh, I'm already so excited. I don't know that I can take a break. I want to do it now. We've got Series 4 coming up. Camille is the next episode we're going to be talking about.
This is where I came in back in the day, Camille. Series 4 is home territory for me.
Exciting times.
I am going to be in boss mode all over Series 4. I need to figure out what boss mode looks like first.
That's what the break's for, right?
Exactly.
Listener, we will see you then. Thanks for listening.
Don't stop now.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns. Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.